The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Great Monday. Thanks for being with us. I thought the NFL playoff games, for the most part, the best one was last night in watching the Saints in Carolina. I didn't see the end of the Chiefs-Titans game. I went to see the post with my wife on Saturday night. We were up in Scottsdale. Actually cried during that movie. I don't cry at movies very often. That's not my deal. But I was so emotionally shook by the movie. And Goody told me, Bill said that there's points where he was cheering. But it was so emotional and so well done that, yeah, I was shedding tears. A couple of times my wife leaned over to me, and she cried at the end, too, for a different reason, probably because she had to sit with me for 2 hours and watch it. But I didn't see the end of the Titans-Chiefs game, points said. Andy Reid just can't win in postseason. There's no other way to put it. If it's Andy Reid in postseason, he's going to lose. I don't know what that is. If you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan today, you lose again. I thought the Rams game, it looked like a team that didn't want to be on national television, that just crapped the bed, that was scared. They played scared, like the lights were too bright on them, and that happens for a team that hasn't been there before. The Buffalo game yesterday against Jacksonville was just hard to watch. There's no other way to put it. It was hard to watch. Blake Bortles can't throw. Tyrod Taylor can't throw. Yeah, Calais Campbell and the Jaguars were all over him, but neither one of those quarterbacks can play. Like, Tony Romo was the highlight yesterday of the Jaguars game against Buffalo. Tony Romo at halftime should have gone down and changed and gone out on the field, and he would have been better than either one of those quarterbacks. But Romo was great. He was crushing them. He was anticipating as he did. There's nothing better than Tony Romo on a bad NFL Sunday playoff game for me, for my money. And then the, Atlanta, the way they went about their business, I think Atlanta beats Philadelphia this week, which we're going to try to get our buddy Seth Joyner on. The Saints game, Sean Payton goes for it at midfield, and then you pick off a pass when all you have to do is bat it down. That's just dumb football. Every weekend while I watch the NFL is not a great product anymore. It's fine, but you can't convince me that the four games that happened over this weekend were great football games top to bottom. They were not well-played football games top to bottom. Mike Mularkey's coaching decisions on when to kick an extra point or to go for two were not great decisions, in my opinion. We are brought to you by Sagicor. Sagicor Now. Hey, guys, it is the start of the new year. We're into week number two. Have you checked into your life insurance yet? Have you done it? You need to go to Sagicor Now to protect what matters most to you, and that is your family. Do not put it off here in 2018. You may put it off for years and years and years. Sagicor Now, log on, get your free quote at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. We'll have Casey Jacobson coming up because on the college basketball side of things, I thought Arizona State had a nice win last night at Utah. I did watch almost all of that game. There are some other things that happened this weekend in sports that I want to get to. Eric, what was your weekend like?
I watched most of the NFL games.
And what did you think?
I felt they were intriguing.
Really?
I tend to disagree with you.
Really?
What I don't disagree with you on is the fact that the Tennessee Titans, the Buffalo Bills, and the Jacksonville Jaguars all made the playoffs this year.
Eesh.
Yeah, that was sort of my big picture look at how watered down the AFC was this season. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars hosted a playoff game.
But they had a very good defense.
Fairness, no question.
Fairness. But Blake Bortles and Tyrod, if we're talking about quarterback play in the NFL, Blake Bortles against Tyrod Taylor, it was even more underwhelming than what I thought it was going to be. Like, was there some compelling moments late in that game? Sure there were. But did you ever for a moment feel as though that Tyrod Taylor, even before he got concussed? You know, I felt bad for Nathan Peterman. Nathan Peterman, last time we saw him, he was throwing another interception running after a guy for the fifth time. He's got to come in late in the game, and of course, it doesn't go well for him.
No, no. A nearly impossible situation for you to step into. But, I mean, yeah, Blake Bortles, Brad, had 33 yards passing at halftime, I believe.
So if you're the Cardinals, and you're sitting here and you're looking at this quarterback play of these teams that are making it into the postseason, you know, the whole thing has been, well, you've got to have a great quarterback to make it into the postseason. No, that's not true.
But you do have to have a great quarterback to make it deep into the playoffs.
To win. Yes. Yes, I agree with you on that. To win and win big. Who's left? Who's out? Jared Goff is out. I didn't think he played terrible. I just thought the Rams couldn't hang on to the football. I thought the Rams couldn't do anything right, couldn't get out of their own way.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't play terrible. Alex Smith, I'm not going to blame Alex Smith. Andy Reid can't get his way, can't get out of the way for his team. I don't know what it is about a coach that can't win in postseason. The Chiefs, I read this somewhere that it's been five, they're 0-5 at home in postseason.
Unacceptable.
In their most recent games. How does that happen? So I look around over the NFL weekend and I go back on the Cardinals thing of, okay, of the quarterbacks that are out there now, if we're going to play this game of the quarterbacks that are out there now, and you look at who's still out there playing and then who gets eliminated, and then talk about could it be that Alex Smith comes to the Arizona Cardinals. That was brought up last week. It was out there on social media. It's been all over the place. Alex Smith, because the Chiefs are going to move on from Alex Smith and go to Pat Mahomes. So watching Alex Smith on Saturday for the bit that I did watch, or just watching him this season, he's fine enough. He's better than Derek Anderson. You know, Derek Anderson comes off the bench for that one play where Cam Newton got hurt, and he's terrible. I'm just watching him like, he was not good here. Alex Smith, does that get people excited? Does that put butts in the seats? Does that equate to football games going into the postseason? You know, if your defense is as good as the Cardinals showed down the stretch, and you can make the argument all day long, well, guys were resting players, teams were beat up, Cardinals this, maybe the Cardinals got lucky playing teams. I'm not going to go that far. I thought the Cardinals' defense was pretty darn good down the stretch. I'm not going to disrespect James Betcher. But if I've got to find a quarterback to be a game manager next year, or I go the route of Deshaun Watson if I'm the Texans, where I go draft somebody, and even though he got hurt, I go draft somebody, and I believe that this is going to be our guy. If you're Alex Smith, do you come to Arizona if their intention is to do another Pat Mahomes on you? You know what I mean by that? If you're Alex Smith and you come here and this is my job, well, no, it's really not your job. You're going to come here and you're going to be the guy for all of a nanosecond. If they're the Washington Redskins and they're sitting out there looking for a quarterback, if Kirk Cousins moves on, I think they would go after Alex Smith. So Alex Smith in a Cardinal uniform, can you make a case? Can you make an argument? Sure you can. Can you do the same thing with Pat Shurmur with the Minnesota Vikings? Can you look at all the quarterbacks up at Minnesota and say, you know, if he comes here, he could bring somebody who he's already familiar with, and it makes an awful lot of sense. All that sounds great on a talk show. All that makes lots of easy stuff to write about. It's like, just makes sense. Sure, it does. But you don't know if he likes all three of those or any of those guys. You don't know. I don't know. Is Case Keenum a guy that if he comes here, he's more productive? Teddy Bridgewater, more productive. Sam Bradford with a knee injury, more productive. So I'm looking around at these quarterbacks right now in the NFL and the playoffs and the lay of the land. Alex Smith, game manager, not going to get you beat, probably not going to lead you to victory. He's just one of those guys. He's not going to get you beat, and he's not going to lead you to a victory. He's going to be there to manage the football game. Better situation in Arizona with David Johnson coming back, assuming that he's going to be healthy. And if Larry Fitzgerald returns, does Larry Fitzgerald have anything about Alex Smith? Is Larry Fitzgerald better off with Sam Bradford? So you can play all of these cards through. And by the time we get to about the 1st of March, or by the time we get to the combine, you would hope that all this is sorted out from the standpoint of, is Larry back or is Larry gone? I'm actually hoping that's done before or just shortly after the Super Bowl. Would I like Larry back? Sure. But I don't want to be sitting here at the end of February, I'm really not sure if I'm going to play or not. Well, why not? You got to make plans moving forward. the long-term health of the organization. I am focusing in on the Cardinals on this. The long-term on this organization is, when you look at the quarterbacks that are coming out in the draft this year with the Cardinals at number 15, and you look at the veteran quarterbacks that could be available, the Alex Smiths, the Sam Bradfords, and you look at the coaching opportunity here in Arizona, I think this is a pretty darn good job. Because Seattle's going to go through a rebuild. I think the 49ers are going to figure it out with Garoppolo. And the Rams, it's hard to say. They've got a great, great defensive front, in my opinion. They have a terrific running back in Todd Gurley. It looks like they've got a great quarterback in Jared Goff. And maybe it was just the bright lights, first playoff game. There was some stage fright, and that's why the Rams played so poorly on Saturday night. Maybe it is. But maybe it's just this is about as good as it's going to get in Los Angeles. Maybe Sean McVay isn't all that. Maybe he's not a postseason coach. You lose one, now you start looking ahead. What are they going to be like the year after? You know, the Cardinals' position in watching this postseason is not as bleak as some would like to make it out to be, in my humble opinion. When I watch the Jacksonvilles and I watch the Buffaloes of the world slop around out there, anything's possible in the NFL. Am I expecting Jacksonville to be Pittsburgh this coming weekend? Do I think Tennessee has any shot at all against New England? Heck no. Jacksonville's got a better shot against the Steelers. On the other side of the street, do I think the Saints could win on the road? Sure I do. Could we see a Saints-Falcons? Could I see the Saints and Falcons? Could I see two road teams take care of business over on the NFC side? I really do. You know, the quarterbacks that are out there left in the postseason on the NFC side, guys, you tell me. You tell me, you take Drew Brees over any of them, right? Right? I mean, you would have to. And Drew Brees' situation in New Orleans is interesting to me contractually. Could that be a direction the Cardinals go? I'd find it hard to believe he would ever leave New Orleans. But you certainly have to have the conversation about it. All right, on the other side, so there's some stuff on the U of A head football coaching search I want to get into. Some college football we'll stop on. And some college basketball, too. We'll have Casey Jacobson coming up, FS1 Pac-12 Network analyst, good friend of the show, ASU U of A this weekend. Sean Miller can't get through to his players. We'll talk about that as we continue on. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. We are self-funded, so these commercials you're about to see, without those people, we're not doing this. We appreciate their partnership and their belief in what we do and you watching us as well. So tonight is the national championship game in college football. And by the way, the Bears have hired their new coach. I'm going to get into that in a bit. It's not a name that you're familiar with, and it's not a name that the Cardinals had been linked to. So I'll get to that in a couple of minutes. Tonight's the national championship game, and I don't know. Eric, are you expecting a terrific showdown like we saw in the Rose Bowl with Georgia and Oklahoma, or are you expecting something along the lines of 14-13 between Alabama and Georgia tonight?
Yeah, somewhere in the lower scoring range. I don't know if it'll be 14-13, but these two head coaches know each other obviously very well, and these two teams know each other very well, and this could be kind of like a pseudo home game for Georgia, since it's an in-state game for them. And from what I've been hearing, the Georgia people have been flocking to get the secondary market tickets. Not that that really means a whole lot on the field.
Right.
If Alabama plays the way they did against Clemson, they're going to win tonight relatively handily. But you never know.
I'm not that intrigued by this. And I know it's a national title game and you and I are college football fans. I'm going to watch. But it's not this weekend. I have not been looking forward. I haven't found myself reading a whole lot or watching a whole lot on this. Like last night after the ASU game, they had a special on ESPNU, and I was out of there within 15, 20 seconds. There's nothing there that I wanted to see. I'm interested that Trump is showing up tonight. So Donald Trump is showing up tonight at the national championship game. And the only sporting event that Donald Trump has gone to, it feels like, during his presidency, is his own golf courses for his own foursomes.
And you know who else is expected to show up tonight?
Who?
Protesters.
Yeah.
They are expecting protesters outside the dome once the president arrives or is scheduled to arrive.
So imagine this. The poor ESPN guys that have their set up, you know, and they have the fans out there and their College Game Day and Reese Davis, and they're holding up their signs, and there's the Washington State flag that somehow makes it. You know what I'm talking about, Eric. We've seen it through the years. You know those protesters are going to say, yeah, we're going to go find the ESPN set.
Of course, as well they should.
As well they should.
Lots of eyeballs.
But are they going to be acknowledged? Is there a news side to tonight? You know, you want everything to be, and in the world of TV, they want to show everything in its most positive light because it's a broadcast partner. To think that, I don't know, Tom Rinaldi is going to go interview protesters about Donald Trump. You would think that ESPN and their production team has already sat in a trailer. Like, it's been rumored for a week that Trump was coming, and reached out to Trump's people and said, we need Trump. Like, Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler interviewing Donald Trump tonight should happen. It's not because I agree or disagree with Donald Trump. It's the president's there. So you have to talk to him. Who's doing sidelines tonight? Do you know? Is it Holly Rowe?
I would guess it's probably Holly Rowe, but I don't know for sure.
So Holly Rowe is, it's someone else though too.
They might have, I mean, Rinaldi might be doing sidelines.
That's
they may
true.
Have a they may have three
one
or
on
four
each
people.
Side. Yeah.
Yeah. Or yeah.
And Rinaldi, I guess of all the names, if you're not going to have Trump up in the booth, like having Trump up in the booth in the first 5 minutes of the second quarter where the game's not going to get in the way. That's where you put him on. You don't put him on the third or fourth quarter. You don't. ESPN would probably say, let's put him on at halftime because they want to get a number at halftime. Most time people go use the restroom, eat food. They don't even watch halftime. There's no reason to watch halftimes. And if this game's a blowout, maybe you save Trump. But I'll be very disappointed tomorrow if I'm sitting here saying, you know, Trump didn't even get on the air. And it's not to hear his view. It's the president of our country. He's at a sporting event. I can go back to George Bush when we were with the Diamondbacks in 2001 at Yankee Stadium. He flew in on the helicopter. When the president shows up at sporting events, put him on the air. You got to do that. The Atlanta branch of the NAACP is urging people to wear white in the game and to bring white towels to wave when the president enters the stadium. The white is meant to mock the snowflake insult that Trump supporters have made against those who oppose the president. We're going to make a snowflake turn into a mighty blizzard inside a Mercedes-Benz stadium when Mr. Trump comes. I don't know. When I go to a sporting event, I'm not thinking that I'm going to go there to protest. I put down my several hundred dollars. I pay to park. Yeah, there's times I get a parking pass, or there's times where I Uber or Lyft out. But if I'm putting down money, if you're putting down money to go to the national championship game tonight, are you really going to run over to a Walmart to get a white towel? Aren't you there to cheer for Alabama and Georgia? I'm going to go put money down and go to the game. The organization has planned a Twitter storm tonight, starting at 6 o'clock and continuing throughout the end of the game. Another group, Refuse Fascism ATL, said it was planning demonstrations outside CNN's world headquarters near the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. They're going to take a knee at 6:30. So on the news side tonight, if you're one of those that watches CNN or you watch Fox News, you're going to have plenty of protest video. Here's a protest going on outside the Alabama-Georgia national championship game. We believe in the right to protest. Good. Knock yourself out. Who's winning the football game? Click. It doesn't matter to me what side of the aisle you're on this. At the end of the day, you're tuning in to watch a football game, aren't you? So that's going on tonight. The game itself, I think to make it more interesting and more fun, I'd like to see Georgia win tonight. I'd like to see Georgia win convincingly. I would like to see Alabama get crushed tonight. That doesn't happen. There's nothing of intrigue around this game on the surface that Alabama should beat up on Georgia. That's how it should go tonight. That's how the script plays out. And I agree with you, Eric. I don't see it happening any differently that Alabama should win this game. But I think for the betterment of college football, it would be nice to see the Bulldogs get the victory. And to do so in a fashion that was pretty much beating Alabama and running away from them. I don't know if that's possible. The U of A football head coaching search. My humble opinion, and I did call around and did text and did work on this a little bit over the weekend. In my humble opinion, I think it's going to close a lot sooner and be announced a lot sooner than people initially had believed. They've hired a search firm. It's actually a search firm that's right up here in Scottsdale, believe it or not. It's a search firm that's right up here in Scottsdale that is leading the charge. This search firm has done other coaching searches this year. They placed Jonathan Smith at Oregon State. They've done other coaching searches from across the country. It's a firm right here in Scottsdale, over off of, I think it's off Shea. Bo Baldwin is the name that I think is the clubhouse leader for this job. He's a current offensive coordinator up at Cal. Bo Baldwin was at Eastern Washington. Bo Baldwin has been viewed as the emerging name. His name was tied to the Oregon job. Bo Baldwin, young, outgoing, getting after it. Eric, I do believe some of what you said last Thursday about the fatigue factor in Tucson internally, about Rich Rod always bemoaning and hating on Pac-12 Media Day and not really playing ball with everybody within the building on that stuff. I do think there's some of that. So Bo Baldwin's the name that I'm looking for on this. Right up next, we're going to talk some college basketball with Casey Jacobson. I guess I've got to bring Lonzo Ball's dad in on the Casey conversation because Casey knows the Balls. If you didn't see, Lonzo's dad said that Luke Walton has lost the Lakers and that all the Laker players hate playing for Luke. On top of that, his two sons have now the media caravan going with them around the world. So I want to talk to Casey about that too. We'll do that next. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. Now let's turn our attention away from the NFL for a few minutes and the college football too, because the story of Arizona State, Arizona, how they have played so far the weekend up in Boulder and in Salt Lake City. Sean Miller saying he can't figure this team out. His quote was, can't reach this team, even with DeAndre Ayton. And also, I think, talking to Casey Jacobson about the LeVar Ball story, I stay away from the Ball stuff, but when it gets to the point of he's lost the team, and this morning it's come out that the NBA, there's people within the NBA saying that coaches are now requesting if any media member asks about LeVar Ball, their credentials be revoked. I mean, First Amendment, let's just, anyways, here's Casey Jacobson, FS1, Pac-12 Network analyst, good friend of the show. How are you, Casey?
Great, Brad. Good morning. How are you today? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Right back at you. Let's start on the college front first. Sean Miller, after splitting the weekend and losing in unimpressive fashion at Colorado, said he can't reach his struggling team. What do you make out of the Wildcats so far this season and what Sean Miller is saying?
It's been a roller coaster year for Arizona, right? So, you know, they lose three games to the Bahamas, which seems like a lifetime ago, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And they rebound with nine in a row. And I still believe that this Arizona Wildcat team is going to run away with the Pac-12 men's basketball regular season this year. Yeah. I don't know if they're going to be Final Four ready, but they certainly have the roster to do that. That was the case before the season started. It was the case after they lost three games to the Bahamas, and it's the same now, even though they lost to Colorado. Arizona is in the same boat as a lot of elite, talented college basketball teams. And that includes Arizona State. It includes the Duke Blue Devils. It includes a lot of teams, Kansas Jayhawks, who have young players mixed with some veterans. That is a difficult spider web to figure out. There are some players, I think, in college basketball, especially some of the young, really good ones, who aren't necessarily all in on playing defense and winning. They're more, kind of concerned with how they are doing, how many points I am scoring, and how my draft stock is looking. And I'm not going to call out certain, specific players. I'm just saying we have kind of, bred a college basketball culture, this one-and-done culture, where winning as a group and listening to your coach isn't necessarily as important as am I going to be a lottery pick, and at what, you know, how much money am I going to make in the NBA? That's just where we're at. That's where Sean Miller's at, and that's where Bill Self at Kansas is at as well.
So in hearing that, I agree with you, but I might flip it a little differently. I was in Tucson for the U of A ASU game. I was talking to some people around the program, and they're in Tucson, and they're trying to figure out what is making Trier tick. To me, watching Trier last year in the postseason, there was an awful lot of, let me show you what I can do for my highlight tape. And the same thing goes to a certain extent for Raleigh Alkins. I'm not seeing that out of DeAndre Ayton. He's a different position. He's got to have somebody give him the ball. But I'm seeing an awful lot of one-on-one stuff from those two players in particular. Is Sean wanting to see a team that is not as selfish, and maybe that's what he's getting at?
Yeah, I do. You know, I disagree with you a little bit. When I watched Alonzo Trier the last couple of games, which is really what we're referring to,
he
struggled. But it's not like he's gunning. It's not like he's taking crazy shots. He shot 9 times total against Colorado. The game before, he only shot 5 times. When's the last time that Alonzo Trier played 36 minutes, which is what he played against Utah, 36 minutes, and only shot the ball 5 times? He had 5 assists to 2 turnovers in that game. So I don't think Alonzo Trier is one of those guys that's like, I have to, you know, score 20 points, or I have to be the hero for us to be a successful team. I think as a group, this Arizona team is up and down defensively. You know, I do a lot of work for Fox Sports 1 and
sure.
for Pac-12 Network. And when I go on the studio, they're often asking me, you know, what's good or bad with Pac-12 teams. And I did a little video breakdown about 2.5 weeks ago on Arizona and the fact that they run a pack line defensive team, which means you're going to pack the paint, you're going to play gap coverage, you're going to protect the rim, and you're going to dare teams to beat you from over the top. They have so many defensive breakdowns. And again, this is over two weeks ago. They had so many defensive breakdowns, fundamental defensive stuff, like not trailing shooters off of screens, not being aware of where the ball is, hugging your man in the corner when the ball's on the completely other side. I felt like they were getting better at that. And then I watched them against Colorado, and McKinley Wright and others were slicing and dicing Arizona. So I just feel like they're not focused for a full 40 minutes. And I think that's what Sean Miller is addressing, those very, very little things on the defensive end that show you that you're locked in or that you're thinking about something else.
What about Ristic in all this? Fans want somebody to blame. I've seen a lot on social about Ristic. I don't see that he's the issue here, top to bottom.
Well, you know, it's difficult. You got to put yourself in Ristic's shoes. You know, he's probably thinking, my senior year, I'm going to, you know, have the best year. I mean, he averaged 11 points a game last year. Mm-hmm. And then this year, he gets less shots. And, you know, he's got to share with arguably the best center in college basketball. So, you know, that can't be easy for a senior. But, I mean, as far as his production, he's giving you exactly what you would ask him to do.
I agree.
I wish Dusan, though, if I'm being honest, I wish he would be a better rim protector. I know he's not athletic, but he's so big, and he's a really smart basketball player. He just doesn't block shots, and that's something that, you know, Ayton can do. If Ristic could do that as well, he could erase so many more mistakes. I think he'd give them 2 or 3 extra possessions a game. But it's probably too late for that. But Ristic is fine, in my opinion. He's fine.
Okay. One other question about U of A, and it's a national one. You're the GM, Casey. Bagley, Ayton. You're the GM.
Well, I would probably go with DeAndre Ayton. You're splitting hairs with these guys. They do play different positions, right? Marvin Bagley, the third for Duke, is more of the hybrid forward. Mm-hmm. Like he can maybe play the 3, but he's more of a 4, where DeAndre Ayton can play the 4 and the 5 at the NBA level. My thing is, who's the more rare commodity, right?
Yeah.
So DeAndre Ayton is the more rare player. Players like Marvin Bagley, although really talented, they come around basically every year, wouldn't you agree? In college basketball, there's always a guy that looks kind of and plays like Marvin Bagley. There are not a lot of players that play and look like DeAndre Ayton. And I was talking to Chris Broussard, who works for Fox, and in the hallway, and he was asking me about, you know, he sees Joel Embiid as a kind of a comparison for Ayton. And I disagree with him because I think that DeAndre Ayton is a lighter, more light on his feet than Joel Embiid. And that's why Joel Embiid is hurt a lot of times, because if you watch Joel Embiid run, he runs like he's got a piano on his back, whereas DeAndre Ayton glides along the floor. I think he'll be a healthy player in his pro career, and that's why I would take him number one.
Talking with Casey Jacobson, FS1, Pac-12 Network analyst. Always good to catch up with Casey on the show. Flip over to Arizona State. They split the weekend. The job that Bobby's doing has been documented, doing great work. Can they keep him? That's been talked about. I guess, Casey, is it trying to figure out how to get more out of your interior players? Last night, White fouls, all three of their post players fouled out. And also trying to get Kamani Lawrence into the mix, into the rotation, that they're going to go through some uneven times here in the next few weeks. That's how I'm seeing it.
No question. And I know people will be like, yeah, hindsight's 20/20. But if you talked to me 3 weeks ago when Arizona State was just, you know, smacking Kansas and they beat a really good Xavier Musketeer basketball team, I was still saying, okay, look, I'm really happy for Arizona State. I do believe that they are a top 15 to 20 team, but top five in the country, I think, was a stretch. And the reason I thought that is because you rarely see teams that are as unbalanced as Arizona State. You know, it's not a formula for long-term success. Last year, they had no front court production. They had Obina Aleka as their five-man. He's basically a three-man. So they made upgrades with Romello White and Daquan Lake. But your point, Brad, is well taken. Once we've gotten to Pac-12 play, Romello White and Daquan, their production has dipped a little bit. And why is that? Because they're raw offensively. Those players aren't guys that you can throw the ball down to in the post and have get you a bucket. So Arizona State is still in the same boat. They're a better basketball team, clearly, than they were last year. But they're still the same kind of team to their core, which is offensive dominated, guard dominant, and three-point shooting dominant. And last night when I was watching studio for FS1 when Arizona State was playing Utah, there was a shot, and I don't know if you remember it, 7.5 minutes to go in the game. It was a one-possession game, and Shannon Evans, he pulls up from about 28, 29 feet, and I'm not exaggerating. Yeah. It was like 9 feet behind the line. There was 22 seconds on the shot clock, and Shannon Evans took that shot. It was, by all accounts, unless your name is Steph Curry, a horrendous shot in that moment. The shot goes in, all right, and then Arizona State, their bench goes crazy, and Shannon Evans is pounding his chest. But I'm watching that being like, okay, that is a shot right there that will win this game maybe, but it is going to lose other games. Yep. And Bobby Hurley allows his team freedom to shoot those kind of shots. If you do that, you're going to live and die. And they died 2 games in a row, and they lived barely last night against Utah.
30 seconds, the LeVar Ball story, now with the Lakers that showed up this morning. What do you make out of it?
I don't like talking about LeVar Ball. I'm clearly fed up. He has no interest in doing the right thing. He just wants to be talked about and be heard. I'm saddened by the fact that he took his son Jello out of UCLA. We want to go back even further than that. I think he's doing his kids a disservice. It's his prerogative to do that. But I just feel like he is becoming the story rather than his kids, which is, I think, his intentions early on, Brad, was to do right by his kids. And now I think he's only trying to do right by himself. And that's where the tragedy is in this story.
Yeah, and I don't want to talk any more about it either because I like talking to you. Thanks for the time, as always, Casey. Stay well. See you down the road.
It's my pleasure. Have a good one.
You too. Casey Jacobson there, FS1 Pac-12 Network. Kurt Warner's dropped in. We'll talk with Kurt Warner next about the playoffs, the Cardinals' search for a coach, and their quarterback. That's on the other side with Kurt Warner. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. Brad Sussmat with you. Our television show on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. 16 airings this week. Pro, college, high school. Things that we see going on across the great state. You can check out all of our content from the TV show over on the website. sports360az.com. 6 years and running doing this. Really appreciate all the partnerships and good stuff there with Casey Jacobson on both ASU and U of A. You can check that out on the podcast a little bit later on. We also partner with AZ Central Sports. We appreciate the partnership with them as well. Kurt Warner joins us now. Always good to catch up with Kurt. The last time we spoke was after the Hall of Fame induction, and then there he was, Christmas night. I'm at my grandparents' house, and my wife's grandparents, and they're very, very much into watching sports at this stage of their lives. And Kurt's there, and they're like, "Is he a nice guy?" And I said, "He's beyond a nice guy." And it's nice to have Kurt join us on the show. How are you?
I'm good, Brad. How are you?
I am great. Always good to catch up with you. Let's start with the weekend, Kurt. What did you make out of the games this weekend?
Obviously some surprises, other things not so surprising. I mean, I think starting the weekend, just Kansas City jumping out to the big lead, Tennessee coming back. That had to be the surprise of the weekend. Not only that Tennessee won, but just the nature of that game, all these young guys, young quarterback, young running back, you fall behind 18 points in the first half, you're in, a tough place to win. You just kind of thought, okay, this is what I expected. I expected Kansas City to kind of run away with this thing. And then to flip the script in the second half and have those young guys play as well as they did and really take over that game in different ways was the most impressive thing and most surprising thing of the weekend. And I think most disappointing thing for Kansas City and Andy Reid and of course Alex Smith, because I really think this puts a big question mark on what his future is going to be. Mm-hmm. Atlanta against the Rams, I can't say I was fully surprised that Atlanta pulled the game out and won that game. If there was one game I thought was scary for the home team, it was that game, just because Atlanta's experience and find ways to win, and they had the ability to beat you in so many different ways. And you were just kind of waiting for them to explode. I think the interesting thing was they didn't explode. It wasn't the Atlanta team that we saw last year. It was a team that played really good defense and controlled the clock with really short passing game and running the football. I would have never expected them to win the game that way against this Rams offense that had been so explosive all year long. But, tip my hat to them, that experienced team that found a way to make the right adjustments and win that game. And again, tip my hat to the Rams and what they did this year. Should be celebrated. They did a lot of great things. Didn't bring their best effort on Saturday night, which I think is always disappointing after a great year. But nonetheless, going in the right direction, a lot of young talent, excited about where they are, just a disappointing finish. And then you flip to Sunday. Can't say I expected a whole lot different from Buffalo and Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. We figured the quarterbacks would struggle against two solid defenses. They did that. They struggled. Blake Bortles, I loved what he said after the game, just saying, hey, sometimes as a quarterback, it's kind of like a pitcher. You don't have your best stuff, and you got to find ways to win anyways. And that's exactly what he did. He wasn't throwing the football very well. They weren't having much success there. But he found a way to make some plays, get some first downs, make some huge plays, set up some scores with his legs. And it was just enough. Both defenses played extremely well. Fitting that Jacksonville's defense made the play that finished that game.
Right.
But low scoring, which you expected. And then the finale was everything it was billed to be. Mm-hmm. You had two great quarterbacks that I thought both played a great game. I felt New Orleans was the better team, and Cam had to play great for them to win. Cam played great. Cam did his part, and I think he got let down by some other parts of that team. And specifically, I just point to that four-play swing at the beginning of the game, where Cam makes a beautiful throw in the corner, receiver drops it right in his hands, that's 7 points. They have to settle for a field goal. Graham Gano misses his second field goal of the year, and so that's a huge swing right there. You turn the ball over to New Orleans, second play of that drive, 80-yard touchdown pass to Ted Ginn, and that, to me, swung the whole game, gave the momentum to New Orleans. They took off and ran with it, and give credit to Cam and the boys that came back and fought and had a chance to win. But I really felt that early swing of momentum and change a complexion, you know, whatever, however many points you want to say, 14-point swing, 10-point swing, right there early was the difference in that game. But it played out like we all had hoped and expected, and both those teams played, you know, gave great effort. Still think the better team of the two won, but Cam did enough to carry his team. You know, had some other guys made some plays for him.
We're talking with Kurt Warner from the NFL Network. Okay, let's dial in on some Arizona angles around those games, and specifically, Alex Smith's name has been linked to the Cardinals with Pat Mahomes. If you're looking at Alex Smith this coming off season, now that they're done, Kurt, what do you see in Alex Smith? Would he make sense being the replacement for Carson Palmer?
Well, I mean, you know, so much of quarterback fits come down to what you want to do offensively. So when we kind of figure out what the coaching staff is and what they want to do, I think it gives you a better sense. But I love Alex Smith. Alex Smith has been a really, really good regular season quarterback, has been a really good winning quarterback, and I think there will be a lot of teams that say, let's go get that guy. You know, we won't go wrong getting that guy. The same knock on Alex Smith now that there's always been on Alex Smith is simply, is he willing to take the plays and take the shots and the chances that a quarterback needs to take outside of a few rare circumstances that a quarterback has to make to win a championship? You know, there's a lot of guys, and, you know, Carson was one of them, you mm-hmm. know, that had really, really good NFL careers. But the only knock on Carson Palmer was he didn't play his best football at playoff time, that he never proved that he was a quote-unquote championship Super Bowl-type quarterback. That's about the only knock that you have on a Carson Palmer after a great career. And that's the same thing with Alex Smith. It's the same thing with Tony Romo. These guys are really, really good quarterbacks, you know, better than most. But there's that one knock, and that knock is still there on Alex Smith, even though he's done so many great things. So I think that's the piece you have to figure out as a coach, as a staff, as an organization, is did he just not have the supporting cast? I mean, look at Kansas. They didn't have great teams.
No.
You know, so he had to carry them a little bit more. But I think that's the question is, does he just not have that piece to him? And if we have all the other pieces, he's definitely good enough to get us there. Or are you just not sure he's got that piece, and on a team that needs that piece, which most teams do, is it worth going down that road with whatever you have to pay him and however long he's got left and whatever you feel kind of your future, or if you're a coach, you know, all those things. I think that's just the one question that you have, but I think there will be a lot of teams that will love to have Alex Smith and will be better because Alex Smith is on their roster. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Okay, Pat Shurmur's name is out here. He's still in the postseason. Sam Bradford with the knee. The other quarterbacks are all going to be free agents. People in our industry are trying to connect dots. The fact the Cardinals do want to talk to him. Shurmur and one of his quarterbacks coming here to Arizona. Does that make sense to you?
I mean, there's so many great candidates out there. You know, I think the hard thing, again, with a coach is, you know, who's got that formula mm-hmm. to really kind of to swing this thing? I mean, Coach Arians did an unbelievable job here. And he, you know, he continued to change the culture that I think we kind of started with Coach Wisenhunt. And he changed it. And now there's a different feeling in that building on who you have to be as a coach and players buying in and all of that. And so you got to find the right fit. And you got to find a guy with a plan that fits where you are as an organization and what you can be moving forward. So I think there's a lot of great candidates out there. And what the perfect fit is, I don't know. You know, and you mentioned Pat Shurmur, and I think that the natural progression there goes, bring Case Keenum with you.
Mm-hmm.
Been in your system, did obviously some great things this year. But I think that's the next piece of it, is just like we talked about Alex Smith, you know, we have to talk about Case Keenum, and we'll see how he finishes up this year, of course. But you also look at that team and say, man, great defense, complimentary quarterback that played really good football with some good playmakers on the outside. What is he really as a quarterback? And I don't know if any of us know the answer to that. And I don't know if we're going to get the answer to that even through this postseason. But I think that becomes the next question. He's played tremendous this year. And I really like what I see when I watch him on tape, how he sees the field and goes through his progressions. The only problem is we've seen a big part of his career where he wasn't that guy.
Right.
And so, you know, it's always that fine line of going, okay, has he turned the corner and will we get this year's Case Keenum for the rest of his career? Or was this one of those special circumstances with a lot of great pieces around him where he played it at a higher level than he's going to be throughout the course of his career? And you know, if you decide to go that route with Coach Shurmur and you want to, you know, kind of look into that prospect as a quarterback, you know, those are a couple of the questions I think you have to ask. A
couple other questions with Kurt Warner from the NFL Network and NBC too. It's fair to say that, right? I mean, you're doing some work. I saw you there on Christmas night. Larry Fitzgerald, do you know his future?
I don't know his future for sure. I mean, I talked to him before he signed the extension, and I think he was weighing some different things, you know, on what he wanted to do moving forward. You know, in talking to him, he wants to win a championship. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just, you know, it's the natural thing that you say when you get to this age, but just talking to him, that's it. You know, I felt for the last couple of years he's getting close to retirement. And the only thing that really keeps him – I don't say the only thing. A couple things that keep him around, A, is he wants to win a championship. You know, he wants to feel that and understand that after getting as close as we did. And two, he feels like he can still be productive and an instrumental part of an organization, as he's shown the last couple years. And so those two things, I think, keep him going and led him to sign that extension. Now, you know, the natural question is, well, Coach Arians is gone – Carson's gone. You want to win a championship. Now where is your mindset? You know, I texted him just, you know, after everything went down last week with Carson and just kind of said, okay, you know, you're the last man standing. And, you know, he just kind of, he joked with me, but he goes, hey, yeah, I've been here before. You did this to me a couple years back. So It's not unfamiliar territory. So I get the sense from him that this isn't a done deal because those guys decided to move on. I think he still thinks he can be productive. He still enjoys the game. But obviously there's a lot to be determined with the organization as far as direction of the organization, head coach for the organization. But I don't know if he's made a definitive answer. I got the sense when he signed the extension that he was excited about coming back for another year. I don't know if the changes affect that to a level where he might not come back. But I'm sure a lot of it will be, you know, who comes in and how comfortable he feels and, and where he feels this organization will be, whether that's next year or if he decides to play a couple more, does he feel he can compete for that championship that he so badly wants?
Kurt, is this a good job? Of all the openings that are out there, I think this is a pretty good job. This is not Cleveland, right, where they're going to get their heads kicked in most every year. So it seems to me to be a pretty good position for somebody to come into, even with the quarterback, potentially Larry, moving on. What are your thoughts?
I think there's different ways to look at it. I mean, of course, where this organization has gone and where they're at in the culture and what Michael Bidwell has done to build a place that people want to be and that can win in so many different facets. And Steve Keim, I think, has done a great job of, you know, building things and understanding what he's trying to do. So from that standpoint, I think it is a great situation. You know, there's a couple other pieces. I mean, you've got a linchpin guy on defense and Patrick Peterson that, you know, makes every team better and a guy that you need defensively. You've got a David Johnson who is a special piece on offense. So I like that part of it. What we know is coaches go as quarterbacks go. I mean, very seldom do you find yourself in a situation where you can be really, really successful without that guy. And you need one of those guys coming in. And so with that being said, you know, you've got a Detroit position out there with Matthew Stafford. You know, in the Oakland job, obviously, it's just been filled. But that was another situation where you got a Derek Carr. You know, so from that standpoint, there's a lot of questions on what you can do and what the plan is for the organization. You know, can we go out and get one of these free agents to make this an easier sell right off the bat where we can be successful because we have that guy? We're going to get one of those guys and then maybe draft a young guy, or are we just thinking draft a guy? And, you know, again, not necessarily a bad thing for a head coach to be connected with a guy they like and draft. But then beyond that, I just kind of look at the offense and go, outside of David Johnson and depending on where Larry's at, but knowing he's towards the end of his career, mm-hmm. you know, not a lot of great pieces there, in my opinion, to build around. So are you an offensive coach or are you a defensive coach? What are you looking at? What's the plan? But no question, from a big picture standpoint, when you look at the organizations that are out there that need a head coach, this to me is a great situation and a great place to be. You just have to answer some of those questions at key spots because you know that coach is going to need to be successful in the early stages of their regime here.
Okay, last question. I'll let you go, and I appreciate your time with Kurt Warner. Are you in that space now? What I've seen from players that retire from the league is if they go into broadcast, eventually they get the itch to want to be down on the field in some capacity. Are you? But you're still ascending. As I mentioned earlier, they just don't put anybody on Christmas Day games. Clearly, you have people's attention on the broadcast end. You're very good at it. You continue to rise. But I've seen numbers of players that get to a point, they say, is this all there is broadcasting games? I want to be down on the field. I want to be on a staff or eventually be a guy. Are you at that point yet, Kurt?
No, I'm not at that point yet. But there's all kinds of things going on in my mind. Is that, as you said, I'm in a great position right now. Mm-hmm. My contract's up with the NFL Network, but I love what I do with the NFL Network. I love the radio work that I do with Westwood One.
Yep.
I really enjoyed the TV stuff and think that could be a great avenue moving forward. Because I love being at the stadium. I love being at the games and being around the game in that capacity. It's also a huge priority for me because I still have 4 kids at home to be dad first and to want to coach my last son that'll be playing and watch my younger kids grow up. So that is a huge, huge priority to me. With that being said, I love coaching. I love working with young quarterbacks. I love the X's and O's of the game, and that is something that I would love to do in the right capacity, but I don't know if that's on a sideline in a full-time coaching position.
Right.
I love doing the stuff I do in the offseason and working with guys. I've talked to coaching friends of mine, and we've talked about putting together a quarterback school to really teach these guys and put everything together and help them get ready for combines and interviews and helping them in the off season. And I've also talked to some coaching friends of mine about getting a consulting position where I could watch film and I could help create a game plan and I could do the X's and O's, because that to me is where my greatest passion is. I love the X's and O's of the game. I love the mental side of the game, teaching quarterbacks and working on game plans and being able to devise, how do I defeat this defense? That's where my greatest passion lies, and it's finding a spot. Is there a spot? Could somebody create a spot? Is there an opportunity to do that in some way moving forward? I've had that itch since I stopped playing.
Right.
I have that itch now. It makes me want to continue to play because I love that part of it. I coach high school football, which is a limited way of doing that, but I enjoy that part of it. So all that to say, I'm not ready, to give up being dad, and I'm too blessed in the opportunities that I have now to give that up to take a full-time coaching position, because nobody's figured out how to do it right where you can be dad and husband and coach. I think you have to give up too much of the others to be coach. So I'm not ready for that, but I am ready and always willing to listen to opportunities that allow me to be dad and do some of the other things that I love doing, but also get more heavily into that part of football and that part of coaching or designing. I just don't know what that piece is yet, and I'm waiting and searching and looking and hoping that there's something like that out there at some point that I can take advantage of.
Now, I hear it in your voice. I hear it in your voice. And I hear it in your voice on the Monday night stuff, too. You're just, it seems to me, the great broadcasters, eventually they want to get down onto the sideline or in a booth. So I appreciate so much of your time. It's good to hear your voice. Stay well. Thanks.
Thanks. Talk to you soon, Brad.
Here's Kurt Warner with us. It's a meat sandwich right there, I'd say. A lot to digest. Good stuff. Appreciate Kurt Warner with us. Our chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. Eric, as always, Eric Sorensen, senior executive vice president of everything. Appreciate him jumping on board. If you missed any part of this show, it repeats over and over and over right here on sports360az.com. Also on AZ Central Sports. It repeats. It goes into podcast form. Our television show is on Fox Sports Arizona tomorrow night, Wednesday night. There'll be plenty of Kurt Warner on the show for that. Enjoy your Monday.